Paddy Power are giving customers a £5 free bet for one race on day one of Royal Ascot. Log on to the app for more information and to claim your free bet. Terms and conditions apply. 18+.
Welcome along to the Racing Post Royal Ascot Day One Postcast. I'm Bruce Millington and I'm pleased to be joined by my two learned Racing Post colleagues, Keith Melrose and Tom Collins, as well as Paddy Power's super shrewd Frank the Tank Hickey. It's all changed. There are six new races. There's a revamped running order. There's new rules on how the two-year-old races are decided. 72-hour declarations. And of course, most importantly, not a top hat or a posh frock in sight. Because Royal Ascot 2020 is taking place, but it's not as we know it, because there are no crowds. The highlight for so many people of the racing year will have to be enjoyed from the armchair. But it's certainly a lot better than nothing. Five fantastic days, as ever, of top-class racing action. Really looking forward to it. Before we get going with the seven races on day one, Frank, just take us through the latest betting from Paddy Power on top jockey and top trainer. And I'll just see if the lads have any views on whether they fancy anything there.
Yeah, and the top jockey market, Frankie's 11-10, Ryan Moore's 11-10, Oisin Murphy's 10-1, William Buick 14-1, Jim Crowley 16-1 over 25 bar.
And trainer?
And top trainer, Aidan's 11-10, John Gosden 6-4, Mark Johnson 8-1 along with Charlie Appleby. Michael Stout is 25-1 with William Haggis and Roger Varian, and we're 33 bar.
Tom Collins, does anything jump out at you from those prices?
Not from a value perspective. I think Frankie the Tory and John Gosden are the obvious ones here at 11-10 and 6-4 respectively. John Gosden started the season since the resumption of racing in fantastic form. I think he's trained 27 or 28 winners and he's probably the most likely winner of the top trainer ahead of Aidan O'Brien. Not from a value perspective, but I imagine the Tory and Gosden will come out on top.
Keith, has anything caught your eye?
No, I mean, I very rarely bet in these top trainer, top jockey markets, to be honest with you, and nothing from what Frank's just reeled out there really did catch my ear.
Frank, are you going to play a straight bet as well?
Funny enough, I've never had a bet on one of these markets in my life. It's just not something I'd look at.
Okay, well, before, again, one thing I do want to ask the guys is, because it's slightly different this year, obviously the flat season only started 2 weeks ago and, you know, it's all very different. Is there any, are you going to approach Royal Ascot 2020 differently? Are you going to, are there certain races you're going to steer clear of? Are you going to be placing more emphasis on the form we've seen this season than last season? Keith, how are you going to approach it this year? Is it very much business as normal?
I think overarchingly it is just going to be the same as ever. I mean, the way the season has started has been suggesting that, you know, it's like they've never been away. The time spent behind closed, the time spent not racing has been spent getting horses fit, it seems. I've seen a lot more in the way of horses that are ready to run. There'll be a few exceptions. I mean, there's one we'll come on to today. No crowd in Batash is going to be an interesting one. And the two-year-old races, I think, are going to be particularly interesting because quite easy to be across absolutely every piece of form still at the moment with only 2 weeks to go at. But in the rounds, I won't be changing much generally, but there are a few instances, obviously, when it will come into things.
Tom, are you looking to really get stuck in or are you going to be treading carefully? What's your approach going to be?
Yeah, so I didn't really have any time off over the lockdown as I was focusing on the US action. So I haven't really had any time away from racing. So I'm full steam ahead, looking forward to it. As Keith said, you can be on top of all of the two-year-old form at the moment. So I'll be paying extra interest in juvenile races. And also just putting extra focus on horses that go well fresh.
Excellent. And Frank, from a bookmaker's point of view, is this it obviously is a different Royal Ascot. How have you and your odds compiling team kind of changed your approach to it?
We'd be focusing on, you know, run to form of trainers first time out, you know, for horses fresh, doing a lot of analysis and that, and you know, we'd be dealing with or analyzing, you know, how races are going to be run, etc. too, like, so a lot of the form is going to be based off Newmarket a couple of weeks ago when there was a massive bias to front runners, but on the straight track front runners don't have such a, you know, a strong record at Ascot and a pace to be held up in over certain trips. So that kind of stuff and analysing and factoring into our prices would be important.
And Frank, if there were, say, three stables that you would think are going to run really hot this week, which would they be?
Gosling's is the obvious one. I think Mark Johnson as well. And yeah, I'd keep an eye on anything. I don't know, I'd even check his entries, but Tom Clover is an unbelievable form at the moment. If he is any runner, I'm definitely keeping him on site the way they're going at the moment.
Lovely stuff. Okay, let's get stuck into these seven races on day one, starting with 1:15. It's one of the new races. It's the Buckingham Palace Handicap. Over 7 furlongs, a glut of runners, and this might be a theme for the week. John Gosden has the favourite. Frank, spin through Paddy Power's latest betting and then tell us who you think is going to win it.
Yeah, we're 6 places here as well, Bruce, so a bit of value on the each way side of it. So Derek's 4-1, Queso 6-1, Mutamasic 13-2, Cliffs of Capri 11-1, First Contact, Blown by Wind, Greenside, Moktayel, Firmament all 12-1, and we're 16-1 bar. Yeah, there was two. There's two I liked. Queso was the first one. Now he's he ran a cracker last year in the behind Raising Sand in the International. He was only beaten ahead, and obviously we know what Raising Sand went on to do the rest of the year. He was running off a mark of 95 there. He was only beaten ahead. He's up to 99. He had a nice spin up in Newcastle last week behind Derek, but that was no more than to put him spot on. I think he'd step forward plenty. Like, even if you go back to May last year in the Victoria Cup, he was only beaten half a length by Kate Byron. Obviously, Kate Byron went on to win the Wokingham. So I think he's pretty solid. The other one I liked is an old friend of mine, Flaming Spear. I just think he's been dropped a lot for 4 runs last year. Like, if you go back to 2018, he made a season reappearance in the Hunt Cup off 105, and he won his side from Raising Sand. He was beaten 3.5 lengths in fifth, but he was drawn on the wrong side. And 2 runs later, he won at Goodwood over 7 furlongs off a mark of 104, impressively enough. Now, that form worked out well afterwards in that Kate Byron was second. He obviously went on to win the Wokingham the following year. Lake Volta was third. He won a Class 2 handicap last season. The Vale of Kent was fourth, won the Bunbury Cup last year. At the end of that year, then he was fifth in the Challenge Cup off a mark of 110, finished with a right rattle. He was probably too far back and made his move too late. He won at this level as well at the end of 2018. Now, last year, things didn't really go to plan, but he ran respectably in the Lennox on his first start. He was only beaten just under 3 lengths. And after that, then he ran on soft ground and heavy ground in one handicap, and he disappointed the Kempton. But like, he'd been dropped from a high of 110 down to 100 now. And I just think that's a very dangerous mark. Like, he is an 8-year-old, but I think the ability still remains. He's drawn 25. The ground is perfect. I think the trip is ideal, and there's a bit of pace around him. So I think he's a very big price at 25-1. I really do.
I did wonder whether you'd keep the faith, Frank, and you have. Keith, who do you think is going to win Buckingham Palace?
Well, one thing that's new about Ascot this year is with first race, we're going to get into the what side's the better argument. It's always my favourite part of Royal Ascot. And we're going to get, so, you know, Big Field Handicap to start with. You normally come up in a group in the Queen Anne. Not the case this year. I say that because, obviously, and more often than not, you want to be on a higher side. And I've picked the one that I really sort of fancied on form is drawn in 10. It's Glenn Shiel. He ran at Newcastle on Tuesday, the week we started back. That was just a run out, really. It was 6 furlongs. He's not run over that short a trip for a long, long time. He did really improve, dropped back to 7 last year, and a stiff 7 too. So Ascot is going to be right up his street. Shaped pretty well at Newcastle, just looked like he needed another furlong. And, you know, with that spin behind him, you can imagine this has been the sort of aim to get him to one of these big handicaps this week. So, yeah, he's the one I'd be looking at about 20-1, assuming he's on not too far from the right side.
Excellent stuff. Tom, who are you going to go for?
Yeah, as Keith said, I think you want to be drawn high here. And Sheikh Handaman Maktoum seems to be holding all the aces with Derek at the head of the market. But his only poor effort came on turf. And I'm just not convinced that he's going to be as good on turf as he is on the all-weather. And Miles, his perfect trip on pedigree. 7 furlongs may be a little bit sharp. So I'm going to be sticking with Mutamasic, Roger Varian's runner. Roger Varian's been striking with a few first time up in the last 2 weeks. And Mutamasic clearly goes well fresh. He showed a good level of form on the all-weather on his first 3 outings, including winning a novice event at Chelmsford that produced a few subsequent winners. Yeah, and then he showed significant improvement for turf. It doesn't look like it. If you watch the replays, he seems to struggle two furlongs from home. But he really stays on powerfully in the final few strides. He won a 40-run race last time at Donny. I think he's a horse to follow. He looks well-treated off a mark of 100, and I think he's the value in the race.
Okay, thanks, chaps. So the Buckingham Palace selections. Frank is going for Queso as his main tip, but he can't resist a little on Flaming Spear, his old friend. Keith Melrose goes for Glenshill, and Tom Collins is going for Muta Marsik. Next, the 150 is the race that always used to start Royal Ascot. I didn't really like having the Queen Anne as the starter. I mean, I know they want to start with a bang, but I think we like to feel our way in rather than going with one of the highlights. But anyway, it's the second race on the card now. It takes place at 150. It's Queen Anne Stakes, and we've got an Aidan O'Brien favourite, Frank, in Circus Maximus.
Yeah, he's 9-4, Terabellum 130, Fox Chairman 15-2, Scarjo 9-1, Duke of Hazard 10-1, Moatar, Mustachery, and Roseman are 12-1, and we're 14s bar, and we're also paying four places here as well, Bruce.
Lovely. I know all those extra places that you hear Frank mention will be available, as well as on Paddy Power products on racingpost.com and the Racing Post app. Keith, who do you think is going to win this?
Queen Anne often is a really interesting race, isn't it? And I think it's another one here. The reason it's interesting is it's normally quite a bad group run, quite frankly. And I think that's possibly the case again this year. I can't see why Mustachery's 12-1. I'm not saying he's the likeliest winner, but I'm surprised at that sort of price. In a race where not an awful lot of these are proper group one horses. He obviously won the Lockinge decisively last year from a very solid Lawrence. And then on his last start, he ran on RPRs to exactly the same sort of level when he gave Lamato and a lot of other Group 2 class horses £5 and a beating in the Challenge Stakes. So, you know, Michael Stout, he's coming in fresh. He sort of needed the first run last year, but Michael Stout's not going too badly. You can imagine he's been primed for another early Group 1 in the season. It was probably going to be the Lockinge until we found out we weren't getting that. So I think the plan would always to have been to have Mustachery fit nice and early, so I don't see any reason why you outrun those odds.
Tom, who's your idea of the winner?
I like the unexposed horses in this kind of Group 1. A mile race, I feel like the horses like Terabellum down the bottom of the race card, and Fox Chairman, who is my selection. I think those two will go close. Fox Chairman represents Andrew Boulden, who obviously has his team in flying form at the moment. He's a son of Kingman, and Kingman can't do anything wrong as a stallion either. As a sire, sorry. He's bred to be a superstar. He made a huge impression when bolting up at Newbury on his debut. And then he suffered terrible luck behind Circus Maximus, who's the favourite in this race, in the D Stakes at Chester. He probably should have won that day. And hopefully he can reverse the form of Aidan O'Brien's runner. He ran a screamer in the Hampton Court at this meeting last year. He was far too keen. I don't know how he managed to finish second. And then he ended the season on a high in the Stevenson Stakes. He goes well fresh. Balding string and flying form. He'll like the track, and any rain will help his chance.
Okay, so the lads have shunned the two at the top of the market. Will Frank Hickey do likewise?
Yeah, I think Terabellum is quite short. Like, she was relatively impressive at Newmarket, but the time was relatively slow, but the section was fast. Like, so the drop and trip mightn't be an issue, but yeah, she's a fair bit defined still and a fair bit of improvement to be winning this, even though it does look maybe slightly below par. The one I like is Mohatar from Marcus Dragani. He's had a relatively decent start to the season. I think it is interesting that Mustachery is rated 121 and is the highest rated horse in the race, but yet Jim Proudy picks Mohatar. Apparently he did a lovely piece of work last week, but he's very likely raced. He's only had five starts. He was second on his debut, but like he broke his maiden in Nottingham over six furlongs in a decent race with the likes of Alfred Boucher, Swindler and Alucard behind him. They're all horses rated at least 80 up to 96. He finished his two-year-old career winning the Horace Hill at Newbury over seven furlongs. That he was 33-1 that day. It's just a surprise connections, but he was impressive in the way he did it. And he reappeared last year in the Greenham, where again he was very impressive, showing a great turn of foot to beat Great Scott, Urban Icon, and Hello Umzane were behind. Like, they're all horses rated 110 plus. So the way he travelled was just eye catching. And he met a setback. He was quite fancy for the games and met a setback, and we didn't see him till the QE2 on Champions Day. And I thought he ran a really good race considering the time off and the heavy ground that day. It probably wasn't ideal. He finished fifth, beaten about five lengths, and probably wasn't in the best position through the race, but he showed plenty, and I think he's a great each-way bet here. He'll be held up in probably the second half of the field, and that's what you want here. Front runners don't have a great record on the mile straight track, so like that might be a negative for the likes of Circus Maximus. But yeah, I'd be quite keen on Muhatar here, and I think he'll play a part.
Thanks, chap. So Tom goes for Fox Chairman, and the others go for Sheikh Hamdan, owned horses. Frank goes for Mohartha, and Keith goes for Mustachery. Lovely stuff. The 225 is the Ribblesdale. And here we get the chance to see just how good Frankly Darling is. She was the star of the first day of the flat season, when absolutely bolting up at Newcastle, and that got her very short for the Oaks. Obviously, Love has since taken the stranglehold on that race. But she's got a chance here to really lay down a marker and prove that she is potentially top class. How do Paddy Power bet on the Ribblesdale, Frank?
Again, we're paying four places here. Frankly Darling, 6-4. Bournemouth Pride and Trefoil are both 5-1. Miss Yoda, 6-1, along with Passion. Ennis Diamonds, 10-1. And we're 16-1 bar.
Tom Collins, is there any juice in Frankly Darling's price?
Frankly, no, is the answer. She looked really impressive at Newcastle. She travelled powerfully, put away a reasonable field with a sparkling turn of foot. She looked really green out in front. She was hanging a bit right and left. Rab Havlin said in the interview after that she was pretty green and immature. So it's not a surprise that they're going to the Ribblesdale before the Oaks, just to get some more experience into her. I think she's a real Oaks contender, but she could bump into one today. And even if she doesn't, 6-4 represents poor value. I was going to say the value in the race is Bournemouth Pride. But when I woke up this morning, I saw that Hugh Taylor put her up and she was immediately cut with every firm. So I still think she's the bet in the race, Bournemouth Pride. She's my filly to follow this year in the Racing Post and in the Racing and Football Outlook. She clearly wasn't at her best on her return at Kempton. She was slowly away. She suffered a poor trip. She was forced wide round in the bend. Maybe she wasn't suited by the all-weather either, because her sire, Born to See, has just got a 10% strike rate with his progeny on the all-weather, compared to a 35% strike rate on turf. So that's another reason why she might improve for the switch back to the grass. She was really impressive when winning her only start last year in listed company. I think she's the value in the race, Bournemouth Pride. I'll probably play the forecast, Bournemouth Pride and Frankly Darling.
Okay. Frank, what's your approach going to be?
Yeah, well, like I said, Bournemouth Pride's debut win at Newmarket could be working out much better, with Peaceful winning the Irish Guineas and Run Wild winning the Pretty Polly at Newmarket. Like, she was disappointing at Kempton, and she was very weak in the betting. Like, she was very short initially, and she went to an absolute walk and ran like it as well. She's a bit to prove, but yeah, the switch back to turf probably a positive. Look, I'm a fan of Trefoil. I thought she was impressive on her debut at Newmarket last year. She did plenty wrong and still won. Like, she was very kind of keen and pulling for her head for the first furlong and a half or so. But she was very strong at the finish that day on soft ground. And at that race, it's worked out relatively well. The fourth, Crystal Mystique, won a decent maiden at Kempton, beating horses, plenty of horses that have won, including a listed winner. The seventh, that day was English King, who's vying for favouritism for the Derby now. So, like, there was a bit of substance to the form. And on her reappearance at Newmarket, like, all week there was a bias to the front runners, and Run Wild just got loose on front and couldn't be paid back. But she did shape like she wanted further. Even 10 wasn't far enough for her. And I just thought, I think she'll drift a bit. I think you'll probably get 6 or 7 to 1 at least, and I might have a few quid each way in her.
Trefoil for Frank. Who for Keith?
I basically don't need to speak. Tom Collins has said exactly what I would have said. Bournemouth Pride is the value. She got an absolutely rotten run at Kempton, and before that, looked extremely good. Obviously, Peaceful and second in that race has gone on. Then what she's done, yeah. If she'd come here straight here rather than going to Kempton, she'd be joint favourite.
Okay, no love for Frankly Darling. Instead, we've got Tom and Keith both siding with Bournemouth Pride. And Frank going for what could be the first of a good week for King Rafe. He fancies Trefoil. Four more great races coming right up.
Paddy Power are offering extra places for each way betting every day of Royal Ascot. Check out the app or website now. Terms and conditions apply. 18+.
Welcome back. It's the Racing Post Day One Royal Ascot Postcast with Bruce Millington, Keith Melrose, Tom Collins and Paddy Power's Frank the Tank Hickey. The 3 o'clock is the King Edward VII Stakes. It's a Group 2. It's on ITV. Smallfield and Mogul is the hot favourite, Frank.
Yeah, he's 8-11. Mohican Heights, 4-1. Arthur's Kingdom, 9-2. Papa Power, 9-1. Pile Driver, 14-1, and Sounds of Canyons, 25-1.
Any value here, Frank, or do we just sit back and assess how good Mogul is?
Yeah, well, like, he's definitely Coolmore's Derby horse. We have a very significant liability for the Derby, actually, so I wouldn't mind seeing him get beaten here and maybe getting beaten at last, or at Epsom, or even not going at all. But it's difficult to see how he'd be beaten. Now, in saying that, he wasn't impressive at Leopardstown on Champions Weekend last year. He was only workmanlike winning that day. And that race, like, while the form is so-so, the second ran okay at best in the Irish Guineas. The fifth, Corbomont, did win the Derrinstown, but I'm not sure that was a very strong renewal. And he was disappointing up on Topeka at Newcastle in the Vertum Futurity. But in saying that, he doesn't probably have a whole pile to beat here. If I was looking for a bet, I'd probably be looking to try and back Arthur's Kingdom without, or to back Arthur's Kingdom in a match bet with Mohican Heights. He's a half brother to Joshua Tree, who was a Group 1 winner in Canada. He ran in three maidens last year. It didn't look the most straightforward, but I think the step up a trip to mile and a half is exactly what he wants. Like, he was second in the Group 1 criterium to St. Cloud on heavy ground over 10 furlongs, running on strongly. Frankie's booked, and just the way Aidens are going, they're all flying it. I just think he's a bit of value in the without market, potentially, looking at the win prices there in Mohican Heights and him. I think he should be shorter than Mohican Heights, personally.
Keith, this doesn't look the most exciting betting heat. Is there a way you can get people excited?
Well, I was sort of thinking along those lines, because I sort of roughly agree with Frank. I think Mogul is probably going to win this 8-11 fair price, given that I don't think anything in there particularly is up to the standard he's being aimed at. He's not a Derby horse particularly. I would be looking to maybe reverse forecast or betting without on Papa Power. It's a case of open the box and see what's inside, really, because he's only really run on the all weather and novices and maidens, but his last two wins have been those of a horse that is definitely going to be 100 or higher. And that being the case, he probably should, in a race that's not actually all that good for the grade overall, be in and running for second. The form at Newcastle last time, you know, the third has, they've basically rated that as low as they possibly could. The third came out and ran a stone higher subsequently. So you can see Papa Power being 105 plus horse, and that being the case, he's a sporting bet for chasing home Mogul.
Tom, anything to get stuck into here?
No, this is one of the races that, well, probably the only race on the first day of Royal Ascot that I'll be bypassing. I think Mogul's just going to win, probably. It's a pretty poor turnout, in truth. It's hard to look past Mogul. Aidan O'Brien's already won two classics this year. He's clearly got his string far forward. He's a leading Derby contender, highly regarded at Ballydoyle, and I just don't think the all-weather suited him last time in the Vertum Futurity, so I think he'll just make amends. 228-day layoff, not a problem. 1 mile four, not a problem. Favourite wins, boring race, on to the next.
Okay, that's absolutely fine. Don't forget, it is Royal Ascot, but it doesn't mean you have to get stuck in every race. As ever, bet responsibly. 335 is the King's Stand. It's a Group 1, well, it's a Group 1 in terms of the favourite. It's probably Group 1.5 elsewhere, and that favourite is the Mighty Batash, who on his day is one of the most exciting racehorses we've had this century. He's 4-6, I think, Frank. Take us through the rest of the prices.
Yeah, he's 4-6. Glass Slippers, 4-1. Equilateral, 7-1. Liberty Beach, 9-1. Shades of Blue, 20-1. Rocket Action and Tiz Marvis are 25-1. And we are 33-1 pair.
Keith, this will be interesting, won't it? I mean, you know, Batash, he's not the easiest horse to call, is he? But have you got a handle on him? Do you think he'll just turn up and win this?
Well, my handle on Batash was that I would never back him at Ascot. He's a horse that just sets off fireworks, and you're not expecting fireworks to last when the hill's there at the end. He's a horse. Form says I can't do that. Form says he wins, but I'm going to. I just can't have Batash lasting up the hill. He's too excitable.
But this opposition is, I mean, it's not really Group 1 standard, is it?
Well, that's it. There's only one other Group 1 horse in the race, and it's Glass Slippers, isn't it? So you're the only bet I can possibly have in the race is back Glass Slippers. You know, their form in France, she really didn't improve. That's the other thing I remember. She's only four. She was improving, winning those last two races in France. She is a Group 1 horse. You've only got one horse running for you if you take on Batash, but it is Glass Slippers.
And do you go each way just in case Batash does blast out, or are you all up to win here?
I think either is a viable option. I don't know what I'll do yet, but yeah, either of those is a good play if you think, well, what if Batash does? The reason I'm playing Glass Slippers is because I just won't be having Batash, so I probably will just go win only.
Keith, are you slightly concerned that Batash will benefit from there being so much less hubbub and hullabaloo at Ascot this year?
Yes, I did think that. That's definitely going to be coming to how I play Batash in subsequent races this year, assuming that people still won't be on the track. That's going to come into my thinking in other races, but at Ascot, he does still have to come up the hill, and that's going to trump the concerns about nobody being there in this instance.
Interesting stuff. Tom, Keith is very down on Batash. What about you?
I think the lack of any Australian or US challenger is frustrating because they would have put it up to Batash. Obviously, he's a clear standout on ratings, on form. He looks a good thing on a going day. But you can't really back Batash at 4-6. He's just a bit enigmatic and, oh, I don't know, I just can't back him that short. He's won first time up every year, so that's a plus. And obviously with no crowd there, that's another plus. So his mentality, temperament should stay fine. I think he is the most likely winner of the race. I won't be backing him. I think the bet in the race is probably Tis Marvellous. Maybe each way, if you're looking for extra places, maybe 4 or 5 places. I think he's around 25, 28 to 1 at the moment. He goes really well at this track. He's just kind of a glorified handicapper, but at the end of the day, he was second in the Wokingham last year. He landed a Heritage Handicap here in July. He might have been over the top in the Roos Stakes on his final start after a long season. I think he's probably the each way bet in the race, maybe with extra places. I think Batash is the winner, but I would not be backing him at those odds.
And what do you think, Frank? Do you think Paddy Powell will be looking to go after Batash or running scared? What's your expectation?
I think he might be one we'll go after. Like, I think the one thing that's going to work against him here is it's difficult to see what's actually going to make the running here. And his best performances, I know people say they've been on downhill tracks, but they've been when he's got, you know, a decent lead to aim at, you know, like, say, Ornage blasting out in front, or Soldier's Call even last year in this race. You know, it's something for him to aim at. And he doesn't have that here. And I just think there's a chance he might have to go off in front himself, potentially. And I think if that's the case, he's going to be very vulnerable in the final furlong. Now, on ratings, he's miles clear. Like, he's rated 126. Second in is Glass Slippers on 116, and she'll get £3. And then third in is Equilateral off 100 levels. That'll show you how far ahead he is on ratings. But just the way this race potentially could be run, I think he's going to be vulnerable. And the one, I've actually had a betting one. I think she actually has a great chance. And that's Liberty Beach for John Quinn. Like, she was 4 from 6 races last year as a 2-year-old. Won on debut, then hacked up in the Hillary Needler Beverly when she easily accounted for Group 3 winner, Rose of Kildare. She went for the Queen Mary, was 2.5 lengths and 4, but she was drawn on the wrong side. She won her side by a length. Now, that race, if you look at it, it's worked out really well. Like, Raffer Prize won. She won a Group 1. Camari's among the favourites for the Commonwealth Cup this year. And Final Song was ahead of her as well, and she was 4th in the Guineas. And even the 5th horse home that day, Al Raya, won a Group 3 in France later on in the season. She bolted up in Sandown in a listed race and was really impressive as well with her turn of foot in the Group 3 Morecambe Stakes at Goodwood. Like, she made a bit of trouble in running that day, and just her turn of foot got her out of it. Now, she was beaten in the Lowther at York, but that was over 6 furlongs. I just think 6 furlongs stretches her a little bit. Now, she did manage to win over 6 at Haydock on her reappearance. She travelled really powerfully again and just about stuck it out. But I think 5 furlongs on a stiff track can really suit her. And I think she's a cracking each way. But we're 9-1. There's as big as 12 out there. I think she might be the one to put up the Batash.
Excellent. Fascinating stuff. So no love for Batash from the lads. Keith has gone for Glass Slippers. Tom's gone for Tis Marvellous each way, and Frank likes the bottom one, Liberty Beach. 2 more races to go. The first of them is the 410. It's the Duke of Cambridge. It's a Group 2 for the fillies and mares over the 1 mile straight course, and it's an interesting heat, this. John Gosden has the favourite, Frank.
He does. Nazif 3-1, Jubiloso 7-2, Miss O'Connor and Lavender's Blue are 5-1, Wasma 6-1, Queen Power 7-1, Magic Lily 8-1, and we're 16-1 bar.
Tom Collins, you can have first crack at this. Who are you going to go for?
I like Jubiloso. The form of the Atalanta Stakes run at Sandown last August, in which Lavender's Blue won on her return to the track. And Jubiloso finished terrible 7th of 8 at odds on. I think that form's pretty good. I think there was a good race. There's a few nice fillies in there. I think Lavender's Blue and Jubiloso will show up at the business end of this race. Jubiloso is the one to take out of it, although she disappointed at Sandown. Her previous efforts, including when third in the Coronation Stakes at this meeting, and filling the same berth in the Oak Tree Stakes at Goodwood, were both really good, top-class efforts. I think a return to that kind of form makes it hard to beat. So Michael Stout's got his team in good nick as well, which kind of surprised me. I don't really like backing Stout horses first time up, but he seems to have had a few winners so far in the last 2 weeks. I think she's the play in the race. Nazif was really impressive at Kempton, beating Billiton Brook, but I'm just not convinced. I think she's a bit short, based on the fact that it's John Gosden that trains her. I think if it wasn't John Gosden, then Jubiloso would be favourite for this race, and therefore I have to back Jubiloso.
Okay, cos no love for the favourites today. Frank, who's going to win the Duke of Cambridge?
Oh, I'm very keen on Lavender's Blue here, Bruce. Like, very keen. Like, she only made her debut at Newmarket April last year. She was very impressive over a mile. She went to Newbury then for a listed race, and she was beaten in the neck by Queen Power. Now she travelled all over. She travelled like a real good thing that day. Just maybe got out battled or outstayed. Now in third was Star Catcher, and we know what Star Catcher went on to do. She won the Ribblesdale Irish Oaks Prix Vermoy and the Filly Mares on Champions Day. So that was a really good renewal. She bombed out in the Oaks, but I think she trip and everything just against her. She probably never should have went. She had a mid-season break, came back in that Atalanta Stakes. I thought she was unbelievably impressive that day. She didn't even get a tap of the whip. She's just travelling like an absolute weapon and quickened when Jim Crowley asked her. Now, her last run was in the Sun Chariot Stakes, where she was fourth, beating 3 1/4 lengths, but she didn't get the clearest of runs. And while she wouldn't have won, I think she would have been beaten maybe only about 2 lengths had she had a clear run. But when you look at that race was full of Group 1 horses. Billiton Brook won. She was a Guineas winner. Voracious was second. She'd won the Falmouth Stakes last year. Iridescent was third. She'd won a Filly's Mile at 2, and she won the Breeders' Cup Filly and Mares on her next run. I Can Fly was placed in Group 1 races. She was fifth. Lawrence was seventh, who was a multiple Group 1 winner. And Hermosa was eighth, and won multiple Group 1 winner. Now, for a horse that only had 5 starts, only three at a mile, she's very unexposed, and you know, she ran really well in that really competitive Group 1. And to be honest, because she's trained by Amanda Parrott, I can see her maybe drifting. And again, I think you might be able to get 6 or 7 to 1, potentially even a little bit bigger tomorrow, maybe this evening. And if that's the case, I'm really, really keen on her. I think she's a massive chance. The way she travels and quickens, it's not many horses can do it. And I'm really excited by her now. I really am.
Oh, you've convinced me, Frank. Keith, follow that.
Well, far less exciting, actually. This is, on the slide, the best race of the day, just so you're aware. It's really, really good. Nazif is deeply impressive at Kempton. I think she's definitely bound for the top. Jubiloso is one I'd probably back if I had to. Tom made the same sort of case I would. I think she's going to keep improving this year. She came from novices to the Coronation Stakes last year, which is something that Tom didn't mention. I think it's really a point I would like to make about her. She's still got loads of improvement left to come. And Frank's told you all about Lavender's Blue in a greater case than I ever could. There is a lot. This is a Group 1 in all but name, I think. Or it'll look it by the end of the year. That means I couldn't be getting tucked into any in particular. But it's very much a race to enjoy.
Excellent. Lovely stuff. So Keith is just going to make himself a cup of tea and enjoy it. Frank is going to be getting stuck into Lavender's Blue. And Tom likes Jubiloso. Right then, from Star Fillies over a mile to some older, more exposed old favourites racing over 2.5 miles. The card concludes at 4:40 with the Ascot Stakes, where the top stables from the worlds of flat and jumps converge. Paul Nichols, Nicky Henderson, David Pipe, Alan King, versus the likes of Andrew Balding and Tom Dascombe and Mark Prescott. Always very fascinating. Dan Skelton's in there as well. So let's see how they bet on the Ascot Stakes, Frank.
Yeah, we're paying a massive 6 places here. Verdana Blue favoured at 3-1, Moon King 8-1, Land of Oz 9-1, Diocletian 10-1 along with Pianissimo, Summer Moon 11-1, Dabawi 50-12-1, Blue Laureate, Coeur de Lion, and Smart Champion, and San Benedetto 14-1, and we're 16-1 there.
Is this a race that enthralls you, Frank? Who do you think is going to win?
Personally, I'd be against Verdana Blue. I'm not sure 2.5 miles in the flat is what she wants. yeah, if it was 2 miles, maybe, but I wouldn't be overly keen. I know, like, on Hurdon's form, you'd say she's still on the competitive mark off 100. Like, we did a piece for the Racing Post there, and I was asked for my dark horse in the handicap, and I put up Pianissimo, and it was 33-1, and I went to look, was yesterday morning, without having backed him, and he was into 16-1, and now he's into 10 and 12-1. Look, he's I thought he was a bit of a left field one. He'd improved. He was decent enough for John Gosden. He was second to Carvin' Hope at Ascot at the end of last year in a novice race. Carvin' Hope has done all right in handicaps since he won his first three starts then, since switching to Anthony Carson. The third start at Chelmsford when he beat Grandmaster Flash, I thought, was a decent effort. That looked a useful race. The time was okay. Like, Grandmaster Flash was coming over from Ireland, trained by Joseph O'Brien, and looked well handicapped, and he got up and beat him on the line. I won't say a little disappointed. He was second of in a four-runner race at Kempton, then over 2 miles behind Rainbow Dreamer. But Rainbow Dreamer has shown himself to be very good on the all-weather. He ran a really good race in Cigarro Stakes up in Newcastle, and he was actually ahead of Mildenberger Pianissimo in that race there, albeit getting a lot of weight. Now, he was off then until Chelmsford, where I'd say it was no more than a spin over mile six. But I thought it was interesting, Frankie Dettori was booked. I just checked, like, he's only had four rides in the last 5 years for Anthony Carson, but all four hit the first four. So I thought that was interesting for a small stable. And I just thought, well, initially he was a massive price and was worth taking a chance on. He's a bit shorter without my money, unfortunately. But yeah, I'd give him a squeak. I'd give him an E2A squeak now, particularly the six places.
Yeah, six places, 20 runners. That is a very good incentive. Keith, what's your view on this one?
We're talking at the top of the show about the differences at Royal Ascot this year. And one of them is, I think it's even easier than normal to spot which ones have been laid out for the races. And I think Mancini has for this. I think, obviously, he's been bought by Marlon Kukac for the Chester Cup, but there's not going to be a Chester Cup this year, I don't think. So they've decided to aim him at the race he went off favourite for last year instead. He's only just joined Ian Williams this year. He ran at Haydock last Monday. I put up Blue Lorry at the stable meet that day, and the way things went in the market and in the race suggested that that was a day for Blue Lorry. Mancini's race was going to come subsequently, and it feels like this is the race it'll be. They booked William Buick for the ride. He stayed on at Haydock like a horse that's going to suit even further. It's obviously a competitive race, and I'm not going to say absolutely put your laces through it and have the lot on, but 14-1 is too big a price about a horse that I think has been laid out.
Thank you, Keith. Tom, who do you think is going to win the Ascot Stakes?
Well, I think Verdana Blue is the obvious one. Obviously, she has a lot of weight to carry, but she's probably got the most ability in this race. But there's no value in that 3-1 price whatsoever. And Ryan Moore, he always seems to have the best horse in the race. And he should have won this arguably 7 out of the last 8 years. He's only won 3 of them. But he just tends to drop the horses out far too far. Lieutenant Miller, he dropped out too far in 2014. Peak Sue in 2016. Chelcar in 2018, Build Me Up Buttercup last year. They all should have won. They were the best horse in the race. So I've just got to take on Verdana Blue purely for the Ryan Moore factor, although I do think he's obviously one of the best jockeys in the country. Saying that, looking elsewhere, I didn't really have a strong opinion on who was going to actually win the race. I thought Summer Moon would run well at the prices for Mark Johnson. He's at the top end of the handicap, but has won first time up for the last 2 years. He proved he can contest the finish in a race like this. When he was third in last year's Cesarewitch. Johnson's got a fantastic record with his stayers, especially in the first 2 weeks of this season. He dominated a staying handicap at Newcastle with his three runners, I think it was a week and a half ago, or on the first day maybe. And being on the front end in this staying race, where most of them might lack for a bit of fitness, could be a big advantage. So I think Summer Moon each way at around 11-1 is the play.
Thank you, chaps. So Tom goes for Summer Moon, Keith goes for Mancini, and Frank goes for Pianissimo. Those are the 7 races on day one. Let's see if the boys only had one bet on the first day of Royal Ascot. Who would it be? Let's get the naps.
This will not be beaten.
Frank Hickey, I think I know who it's going to be.
Lavender's Blue, Duke of Cambridge.
That's at 4:10. Tom Collins.
Jubiloso, 4:10 Ascot.
And Keith Melrose.
The wrongest price is Moustache Ray and Queen Anne.
Lovely stuff. Thank you very much indeed, chat. Suffice to say, before we go, Frank's just informed me that if you want a free £5 bet with Paddy Power on the Queen Anne, all you've got to do is log on to the site, and that is yours. That's well worth taking up. Do gamble responsibly, and please do make sure you rate, review, and subscribe wherever you're listening. We're here every day for Postcast, so we hope you can join us tomorrow for day two of Royal Ascot.
Paddy Power are now offering free streaming on all UK and Irish horse racing. No bet required. Just log in and watch.